Good morning and welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Today, we will welcome back another of our semi-regular guests, Scott Spees from the Spees Home Inspection Service, to field your questions about home maintenance. We invite your questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements, just about anything that goes into the single-family home. If you are thinking about making some changes or something needs to be repaired, you're welcome to call. And while there is much that I could ask Scott, of course, really this hour is yours, so we do hope that you will call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. We also welcome your questions on WILL's Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Now, Scott's running a little late this morning, and so we're hoping he'll be in studio with us in the next minute or so. In the meantime, let me tell you about what's coming up later this week on Focus. On tomorrow's show, amid so much political corruption in Illinois in recent years, we're going to ask the question about how others see this state of ours. Next week in Chicago, there will be an ethics and reform symposium on Illinois government. We'll talk with James Nolan from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, Dick Simpson, a professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and Richard Winters, a professor of government at Dartmouth and the managing editor of State Politics and Policy Quarterly. Should be a fascinating discussion, and I really encourage you to participate in it. Whether you live in the state of Illinois and have a strong opinion about corruption in Illinois politics, or you live outside of the state, we would really love to know what you think and how the rest of the country thinks of Illinois when it comes to corruption. That's what we'll talk about tomorrow. On Wednesday, Kimberly Cronick will sit in for me, and she will have a fascinating discussion about the politics of philanthropy. She'll talk with Samantha King, author of the book Pink Ribbons, Inc., Breast Cancer and the Politics of Philanthropy. Then I'll be back on Thursday for a conversation we're going to call Your Permanent Record. Remember in school how teachers or the principal might say to you that if you got out of line and misbehaved, something would go in your permanent record? Well, you know, that'd be some file somewhere that you had all your dirty little secrets in, all your bad behavior, that spelling test you flunked, every participle you ever dangled. Well, now in a world of Facebook and Twitter and texts that are captured electronically and could potentially last forever in digital form, we sort of do have a permanent record, and an entire generation of Americans is now growing up in that world. This thought occurred to us as we sort of looked around on campus as incoming freshmen arrived in recent weeks, and we realized, okay, they're 18. Facebook's been around for several years, MySpace before that. Pretty much, not only have they grown up in a world where the internet has always existed, but where they've almost always had really easy access to not only seeking out information, but spitting out information to the world, whether the world wants it or not. So that's what prompted us that this might be a good topic to do. So what does it mean for kids entering college today that something they posted online, say, 8 years ago is still there? What does it say for all of us that we may have a permanent digital image, details about us going into not just the coming decades of our lives, but even after we've passed on? So we'll talk about all of that on Thursday. Finally, on Friday, we will talk with the filmmakers behind a documentary airing on public television in the coming days called Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women. We'll hear some clips from the film and talk about it. That's on Friday of next week, rather of this week. So those are the programs we have in store for you in the coming week right here on WILL AM 580 on Focus. All right, so clearly I tap dance for a couple of minutes, and Scott has not yet arrived, and we do hope to bring him in to talk about home maintenance in just a little bit here. In the meantime, this does give us an opportunity to talk a little bit about Focus, about this particular program. As you are well aware, David Inge, the previous host, retired back on June 30th, and we had been going through a process of, you know, rejiggering things a little bit and developing a sort of relaunch of the show as of just a few weeks ago. And I think so far it's gone very well, but we haven't really had an opportunity to speak directly with you about it. That's something that we are planning to do next month during our fall fundraising campaign. We'll devote a show to soliciting topics from you, ideas, guests for future shows, and also telling you a little bit more about the program. We may have to move that up to this morning, depending on when or whether Scott is able to join us to talk about home maintenance. But I thought I might be able to take this opportunity right now to tell you a little bit about some of the things we've been doing behind the scenes in preparation for bringing these shows back live again. So I guess the best place to start is to tell you that, as many of you may know, David Inge and Celeste Quinn and Harriet Williamson all retired in the last several months, among a number of folks at the University of Illinois who retired in part because of some changes in some funding formulas that dealt with retirement and money that they had saved up towards retirement. It was in there to their advantage to do so. As a result, it afforded us an opportunity to take another look at Focus, what we've been doing with the program for these 30 years, celebrating the fact that it's been on the air for 30 years and has been a really fantastic program, but also realizing that, well, as times change a little bit, we might want to make a few adjustments here and there without reinventing the wheel, because let's face it, this is a pretty good wheel. So one of the things we did was we sat down and determined what are going to be the characteristics that make up a good Focus program. What makes an ideal Focus program? And we came up with a list of characteristics. And I want to read those to you now so you get a sense of what we've been doing with the program these last few weeks, what we intend to do in the coming months. And then I'd love to hear your reaction to these concepts. So before I do that, I should probably give out the phone number again to remind you that if you want to talk about home inspection, home maintenance, as Scott arrives, we welcome those calls. But also if you have some suggestions for topics for shows, some guests, something that we should do with the program, we welcome that as well this morning. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Okay, so here's what we came up with as sort of the basis for an ideal Focus program. And as I sort of tick off this list, I'll tell you about some of the details behind what we're thinking. The first thing that we identified is that an ideal Focus program should provide context and depth to help you to be better informed about the issues and ideas that affect us all. That's pretty straightforward. I think you understand. The goal is to bring more depth, more context, more perspective to these issues that affect our lives so that you're better informed about them and you can make better decisions about them. The next item we came up with was that an ideal Focus program will be developed in response to community needs. So, of course, we need to reach out to you and ask you, what are your needs? What do you want to hear from a program like this? And that's exactly why we have an opportunity at this moment to do so, and I hope you will call. Again, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. We identified that an ideal Focus program will explore subjects that originate in or impact our communities. So it might be something, a discussion that we have might be taking place here, but it should certainly have an impact on what's going on here. So, for example, we're tomorrow going to talk about political corruption in Illinois. Well, what does that mean for the identity of Illinois and in along with that, the identity of the Champaign-Urbana community, of Central Illinois in general? What does it mean for us that people have a tendency to perceive us as one of those states where corruption exists, a couple of ex-governors in prison and so forth. An ideal Focus program will be interactive, encouraging listeners and guests to communicate with one another. You may have noticed I've been trying to do that in recent weeks. The last few weeks I've been trying to really press the idea of speaking not just during the program, but continuing the conversation, which you can do online at will.illinois.edu/focus. We have a place for you to post comments any day if you would like to. And if you have a question that comes up over the course of an hour, you don't get it answered during the show, and you would like the guest to respond to it, you can post that question on our website. We, of course, keep track of everything that gets posted to our website, and then we'll get in touch with the given guest and say, hey, can you go online and respond? So that is one of our goals there, to be more interactive and find a way to continue these conversations going forward. An ideal Focus program will engender trust in WILL as a community convener. That's something that we think is important to play a role in convening conversations, issues, ideas, topics, so that the community at large is talking about a variety of issues and ideas. An ideal focus program will capture community zeitgeist. It's a highfalutin word to basically say, you know, there are moments when there are certain issues, certain ideas that are top of mind for everyone, and focus should be a part of that conversation. An ideal focus program will be accessible to listeners. And that's something that is a conversation, in fact, that I had with David before he retired. It was something that he kept raising as this is something that we really think is important about the show. And I agree, and I'm glad we're continuing this idea that whatever the topic, whatever the subject, it's something that makes sense to you and can be accessible to you. And that goes right to the next item on our list. An ideal focus program will be relevant to citizens' lives. If it's not relevant, if we're talking about subjects that really don't apply to anyone or anything, then it doesn't make sense that we spend that time doing that. An ideal focus program will pique the interest of the host. That's on our list. And I think that's probably important. And that doesn't just apply to me. That applies to anybody that might be filling in for me. Hopefully the subject that is being discussed is something of interest to us. An ideal focus program will make imaginative use of multiple platforms. That's something we're still working on. We're still trying to get to the point, and I think we will get there, where we are making more use of online, social media, and we've kind of already started with that, but maybe we can find ways to do things that relate to video and audio online, that sort of thing. An ideal focus program also will spend as much time on an issue as that issue deserves, no more, no less. Now, of course, the goal with focus is to do hour-long conversations, and as such, we are very careful and deliberate in the topics that we select to make sure that they can sustain an hour, or that an hour is long enough to address it. An ideal focus program will provide a public service or explore an issue that is not readily dealt with elsewhere. And I think that's important as well. Can we cover subjects, ideas, topics that maybe you don't get a chance to hear anywhere else, conversations that don't take place anywhere else? I kind of feel like a conversation we had last week with Eboo Patel about how Muslims are perceived in America, particularly through media, is something that we haven't really heard as many conversations about as maybe we could. An ideal focus program will highlight the expertise of university and community guests. And of course, Scott Spees is a good example of that, as are many of our other guests, folks that are either from the university or from the community from East Central Illinois or Western Indiana, who provide expertise in a variety of capacities. An ideal focus program will feature accessible, high-quality authorities who communicate well. And I hope so far we have lined up guests that you feel are doing that. An ideal focus program will be timely, in line with major news developments as they happen. That's something that we're working to do. An ideal focus program will seek multiple points of view and not merely political extremes. So most of the time, I think, as we talk about various issues, you won't just hear the far right and the far left arguing back and forth. There are lots of other points of view on lots of different issues. An ideal focus program will expand listeners' worldview by exposing them to topics and ideas they wouldn't normally seek out on their own. I think maybe we've had some examples of that, perhaps, for you. And an ideal focus program will offer diverse and multicultural views and ideas from people with wide-ranging backgrounds and experiences, and I'd say we've done that as well. So those are the concepts that we came up with, and the goal is to try and meet as many of those as we can in a given day. We realize not every topic hits every one of those concepts, but I think it's doubtful you'll hear a focus topic that doesn't apply to at least some of those. It's a good sort of baseline concept for us to take a look at that list from time to time and say, okay, are we actually paying attention to these concepts and developing topics that are based off of these characteristics? So that's the intent. That's sort of what we've been doing in the background. We've got a team of folks who are meeting every week to talk over topics and guests, and that's how we are coming up with some of the shows that you're hearing. We also come up with shows through direct suggestions from listeners like you. And as it appears, and I'm not getting any indication that Scott is imminently arriving, and therefore I'm going to assume we won't be able to get to home maintenance today. Therefore, let's make this the plan for today's show, an opportunity for you to call in and make suggestions for future shows at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-9455. WILL, or you can reach us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Love to know what you think. What would you like to hear on Focus? Keeping in mind, of course, that it is now a one-hour show, and so maybe there are some topics that we've had in the past that we're not going to be able to get to, or maybe we wouldn't have the time for now. That's something we're trying to work out. Oh, in the meantime, I just received word that Scott Spies will be able to join us later this hour. He will be here for the second half of the show and apparently has run into, sounds like some car trouble, but he's getting that squared away, and he will be here for the second half of the program, which is about 10, 15 minutes from now. So for the next 10 or 15 minutes, if you have some suggestions of what you would like to hear on Focus, please do give us a call now. Our lines are open at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL, 800-222-9455. Or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. So while we're waiting for those calls to come in, again, a reminder that we have lots of interesting topics ahead in the coming weeks here on Focus. And I mentioned the shows that we're going to be doing next week, but you know what? I can pull up our calendar and tell you about some other shows that are coming along. You, I'm sure, have noticed that we have been interviewing some candidates for office. And among those, we're reaching out to all of the 13th District Congressional candidates and the 52nd State Senate District candidates to bring them on Focus so you have an opportunity to speak with them directly. The next one of those will be on Monday, October 1st at 10 a.m. We will talk with Mike Frerichs. He's the Democratic candidate for the State Senate in the 52nd District. We spoke with Republican challenger John Babinick earlier, a couple of weeks ago. And we're also going to have a show dealing with a book entitled Money at Work on October 2nd. On the 3rd, we will talk with veterinarians. So it'll be an opportunity for you to call in and get your pet care questions answered. And then on Thursday, the 4th, we are talking with the author of Harvest the Wind, which deals with, I believe, wind power. The subtitle is America's Journey to Jobs, Energy Independence, and Climate Stability. Those are some of the things that are coming up on Focus in the coming couple of weeks. And we do have a caller on the line. You have a suggestion for a future Focus topic for us?
Yes. I have two or three, actually.
Okay.
Number one, I'm not sure how many of these people that you've had kind of quote-unquote regulars in the past you're going to continue with, but most of them are very interesting and I think have good information to impart to us. And I think that if, you know, maybe you'll have to have them on an every other month schedule instead of an every month schedule or something. Mm-hmm. And like Sandy Mason, maybe you could have her, like, you know, on monthly during, you know, seasons, you know, the growing season, and maybe just once in the wintertime or something, you know, something of that nature.
Yeah, in fact, before you get to your other suggestions, that's actually, we've been having that very discussion, and we're trying to be specific to the particular topic and the particular guests and their schedules. There will be some in the past that we had on monthly that maybe we won't be able to do every month, but it may be every other month. Since you mentioned Sandy, I think the plan is to have her on not quite every month, but yes, during the winter there may be one or two months that we may skip, just because in the dead of winter, you know, snow and ice on the ground, there just may not be much of an opportunity to get into a lot of specifics in terms of gardening. So we're going to be really diligent about which subjects we spend time on and which ones and how much time we spend on them. I mentioned veterinarians coming in. In the past, we would do a show maybe on dog behavior, another one on caring for your cat. Well, we're just going to do pet care, and then that could incorporate any kind of pet. And so those are some of the discussions we're having behind the scenes for sure.
Okay, well, maybe, you know, like the dog people, like we don't have dogs, but I can enjoy them. Maybe you can have them on like once a quarter or something, you know, even like that. And once you get this kind of schedule worked out, you know, maybe to have it in patterns so people aren't kind of fumbling around about those people that are more regularly scheduled that they particularly like to listen to. The other questions are, would it be possible to bring when people have to be out of town or something, to bring David back as an occasional guest host?
Well, that's a wonderful idea, and I would say that would ultimately be up to him.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
and so that's
you know, I presume he can make so many dollars without it interfering with his pension. So, you know, if he was had any inclination, you know.
I think the inclination. Yeah, I think the inclination part may be the part. You know what? That's I'll leave it at this when it comes to David and Celeste and Harriet and anybody else. There were a number of folks working here at WILL who retired on June 30th. I think the door is very much open to any of them if they would like to volunteer or do anything with the station down the road. But obviously, those are conversations we'd have with them individually if they wanted to have them. So.
And my last suggestion is that you have Ed Kieser as a guest, like a couple times a year, because people, I think he's very, very, very knowledgeable about weather, and I think we miss hearing and seeing him.
I think that's a great suggestion, and I think there will be opportunities to do something very much like that. We'll see what we can do, because you know, as you know, I worked with Ed for many years, and he's a good friend of mine, and we would love to find ways to maybe have him do something with the show at some point, for sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for the call. And we welcome your phone calls this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. If you're just joining us, Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service will be along to join us in the next several minutes or so. He's running a little bit behind this morning, and so we're taking this opportunity to solicit some suggestions from you of topics for future programs, maybe some suggested guests. And we have several that have come in via email, but before I get to those, I want to remind you, you can call us right now at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you could email those suggestions to will-talk@illinois.edu. We have an email from Michael in Champaign. He suggests having a Social Security expert on hand to ask questions. I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I'm going to keep a running tabulation of all of these suggestions. Obviously, there are topics like Social Security, Medicare, a number of other issues that just having somebody on to explain how the process works, maybe answering basic questions about who you contact and what situation. I think there's real value in that. So that's a great suggestion. Thank you, Michael. We have a suggestion from Rona, who says, I'd really love to hear more topics regarding modern literature, specifically interviews with new authors. I would also love to hear more regarding how modern authors are approaching the hotbed that is the political upheaval throughout the world. Also, very interesting suggestion. I'm curious to see how authors of all stripes deal with that, whether they write fiction or nonfiction. There's a lot of interesting questions about how they draw from world events. So thanks for that. We have an email from Jim, who says, the exploding world of online free college courses from major universities opens up a lot of potential for dramatic change in future university education and cost, and the many layers of cultural impact that this may have, including college and university towns. Another terrific suggestion for a topic, Jim. Thank you for that. And we'll kick it around with the Focus team. I think that's a great idea, examining what impact these free college courses, online education, alternative forms of education that are out there are having on the more traditional forms out there. So great suggestions via email. Let's take some more calls. We have a caller from Danville. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I've been interested for many years now in learning something about the behind-the-scenes efforts for particularly Major League Baseball. Hmm. Their season is so long. And I would, you know, we hear their batting averages, we hear their salaries and so on, but I'd like to know how many uniforms they're issued, who takes care of them, who makes their travel arrangements, and just the managerial type, you know, not on the field, but off mm-hmm. the field. And I read, some time ago where one, it was a doubleheader, I think, in New York, and one of the personnel on one of the teams was traded to the other one, and so he played the first game with his old team and the second game with his new team. Now, who gave him that uniform? Who sewed? Do they have a seamstress that sews their names on? All those kinds of things. I don't know if it's within your purview or whether you'd be interested, but I'm particularly since the baseball season is so long and involves so many trips at short intervals, I would just like to know how it's done.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is when you think about a Major League Baseball broadcast, you get a certain perspective of the game itself.
Right.
And maybe you get a little bit of information about who's injured, what the manager is thinking, what the general manager may be doing in terms of personnel and trades. But it's all through this sort of basic lens of telling the weaving the story of the game itself.
Yes, I did hear one of the men broadcasting for the Chicago Cubs is that the starting pitcher gets to decide what uniforms they will wear.
Oh. You know, it would never have even occurred to me, but that makes a lot. I understand why that would be.
It's the kind of thing I think could be well done. I mean, your program does so excellently in all these other spheres that I've, and as I say, I'm more interested in baseball, and I think we have a longer season. And, of course, since the playoffs are soon to begin, interest in general would be fairly high, and I would suggest getting someone from the Chicago Cubs.
Well, now, wait a minute. I might suggest someone from the Cardinals.
Well, no, the Cardinals are still in it. The Chicago Cubs manager might be twiddling his thumbs.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They may not be that busy.
No, I'm a fan of both clubs.
Yeah, me too. I've always said, you know, I grew up in St. Louis, and I'm a Cardinals fan, but if the Cardinals can't win in any given year, I am absolutely rooting for the Cubs.
Well, you see, I spent 5 years in Chicago and 5 years in St. Louis, so I have to go for both of them.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, and good suggestions. Let's go next to Orland Park. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Hi, I'm glad to hear that Scott's going to be back on this morning, and I'm hoping that you guys will continue with some of our old favorites, like the Gentleman with the Cooking Show, and the one professor with the, the couch potato investing?
Right. Yeah, well, we just had Kevin Waspy on this past Friday, and he has updated the couch potato item online from David Sinnoh. That's available at will.illinois.edu/focus. These days, Kevin has been doing the personal finance shows, but and a couple of the folks that had been on for many years, in some cases, they themselves have either retired or have decided they're pursuing other things, or it's just not really convenient for them to do the show anymore. But we're trying with as many of the regulars that people have indicated are you know, they're really fans of, to try and keep up those relationships and continue to do some of those shows.
I always enjoy the visiting lecturers to the university as well.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that's, we have a great resource here at the University of Illinois, obviously, as well as other resources. There are other schools and other organizations that bring guests in, and we do hear from them quite a bit. If you ever hear of somebody coming to town that you think we ought to know about, or somebody that might be a visiting lecturer or something like that, be sure to let us know. And you, again, that email address you can always send it to is will-talk@illinois.edu. So thanks very much for those suggestions.
Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's go next to caller in Urbana. Good morning.
Hello. I've got a couple of book and author suggestions for you.
Oh, okay.
My interest is U.S. history from the beginning of the Civil War on backwards. So the title of this book is called Snowstorm in August by Jefferson Morley. And it's all about a race riot that occurred in Washington, D.C. in the year 1835.
Hmm.
And all that went into that.
Okay.
The second book is called Treacherous Beauty by two authors who I just sent it back to the library and did not memorize their names. But it's the Treacherous Beauty is Peggy Shippen, who became the wife of Benedict Arnold.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that was loaded with fantastic detail. So that's my 2 cents worth for the morning show here.
Okay. You know, and that's something we haven't had a chance to really get into quite yet, are doing shows that are based on specific points in history or specific figures in history. But that is part of, I think, the broad range of things that we could be doing on Focus for sure.
Okay.
So thank you for those suggestions.
You're welcome.
And we welcome your suggestions this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Scott Spies will be coming up in just a few moments here, but we are overdue to take a short break. This is Focus.
Look at a congressional map of Texas, and you'll see some funny shapes, like the 27th District in South Texas.
It's shaped like a Glock pistol.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Robert Draper tells us about redrawing congressional boundaries and how Republicans made the most of their gains in the 2010 elections. Draper writes about it in The Atlantic magazine. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and at 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support comes from the Wesley United Methodist Church and Foundation in Urbana, presenting the Wesley Fall Seminar on Monday, September 24th at 7 p.m. The topic is politics and religion in America, with speaker Robert Rich, retired professor of law, medicine, and political science, and former director of the U of I Institute of Government and Public Affairs.
Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. And we're glad to have you with us this morning. We had been talking through the first half of the show about some suggested topics and ideas for future programs. If you have some of those suggestions for us, we'll welcome them. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or you can call me after the program here at WILL. I'll be happy to talk with you with any suggestions you may have. But we do now welcome in Scott Spies from Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here to talk about home maintenance. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Unless you want to talk about car maintenance instead.
Oh, it's been a rough day this morning.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Well, we're glad to have you here, and we've got still a half hour in the program, and so we do welcome your phone calls today. Any questions you have about the care and maintenance of your home, we invite questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basement, just about anything that goes into the single-family home. If you are thinking about making some changes or something needs to be repaired, you are welcome to call. The phone numbers are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL, or you can email your question for Scott to will-talk@illinois.edu. I've got a couple of things to ask you right up front that came in either via email. Actually, one of them was one of our staffers, a WILL staffer, who noted in an email that this weekend he discovered a termite infestation in his attached garage. My brother had a similar problem a few years back. What, if anything, can we all do to prevent something like that from happening, beyond obviously reaching out to a pest control service and spraying, you know, given number of times a year?
Well, a quick primer on termites would be that termites are put on this earth to get rid of wet, rotting, decaying wood. So basically what they're looking for is some moist wood. Ideally, what we do is we try and keep everything in the house dry so we don't have any moist wood. Probably in a garage, we've got the soil or dirt built up too high around the outside of the house to where it's keeping things wet. Occasionally, it can be a roof leak. I have found termites eating wood around a chimney on a 2.5-story Victorian house because there was a leak up there. Now, these guys, they live underground. The nest can be 10 or 15 feet below grade. It can be 1,000 feet away, 2 or 3 blocks over. If they smell wet wood, it's their job on this earth to make sure that it doesn't pile up. Otherwise, we'd all be knee-deep in debris. So that's what they do on earth. Well, unfortunately, we always kill the wood before we build our houses out of it. We cut it down, so we do have some dead wood. Now, the key here is to keep things dry. This is one of the reasons why I harp a lot on drainage, grading, things like that around the outside of the house. If the soil's built up too far up against the siding, we don't get any air movement around the siding, or we have soil in contact with the siding, that's where the termites are going to find this dampness, and they're going to want to try and get in there and eat the lumber. My guess is on a garage, like I say, we probably have actually soil up against the siding. As the house gets older, things get built up against it. People pile leaves and stuff, you know, behind the garage. Let's put the compost heap back there, things like that. So we've probably got some really wet wood, so termites have come into that. Now, just because you've got termites there doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be in the house. Hopefully, we have the house built up out of the ground far enough to where we don't have soil against the siding. We don't have the soil built up to where it's in contact with any of the framing. Occasionally, we end up with problems around stoops, front door, something like that, because there's usually some wood framing around that area. Really, for prevention, there's no good way of preventing termites. They know where that wet wood is. They can smell it for blocks away. There are several different types of treatment for them. As you said, reaching out to a pest control company, we have chemicals that can be put in the ground. We have bait stations, which we can put in the ground to attract the termites and use what we call a pheromone or a chemical to alter the chemistry of the shell of the termite, the exoskeleton, to where it doesn't shed. If a termite can't shed his skin about every 6 to 8 weeks, they basically perish. So the bait station system for termite control is to put in some blocks of wood around the house in little plastic containers, pull them out every few months and find out if the termites have gotten there. If they do, we replace the block of wood with a chemical stick that the termites continue to eat, and they take the chemical back to the nest, which again, 10 feet underground, 1,000 feet away. Once they get it back to the nest, it affects the entire colony. So you can kill off an entire colony with one of the bait station systems. The tried and true method for years and years has been a poisoning, basically drilling the around the foundation, inserting rods, and pumping in chemical around the foundation and putting a poisonous barrier between your home and the nest of termites, wherever that might be. But as far as actual prevention, look around the house, walk around the garage, walk around the house. Do we have any areas where the grading is too high, keeping the wood wet? Do we have a roof leak, a garage that's been neglected, a little bit of a roof leak? It's amazing how much moisture you can get collecting up there in the rafters, and they will find it.
We have a couple of folks waiting to talk with you. Let's go to Mrs. Mulder in Danville. Good morning.
Good morning. During this past drought, I have noticed that the soil has been pulling away from the west side of my concrete block foundation. I have read or heard years ago that the one thing you don't want to do is to pour extra dirt into it. But what should I do?
Okay, you're absolutely correct with your information. What happens is, as the soil dries out, it does shrink. We have a certain amount of clay content in the soil, particularly in this area.
A lot here.
Yeah, very difficult to grow plants because of the amount of clay. And that clay, as it dries out, does shrink, and it does pull away. And if you add more soil next to the house, you do some planting or landscaping and add more debris, then when that soil does regain the moisture, it goes to expand. Now there's more soil there than there used to be, and it puts a lateral pressure against your foundation. Actually, most of the concrete block foundations in this area have some type of cracking due to this expansion and contraction of the soil. Actually, one of the best things to do is to get a soaker hose and water the foundation. It sounds awful simple, but it means what we need to do is get a little bit of moisture around there. Now, I wouldn't run it to where we're getting water running through the concrete block, but wetting it enough to allow the clay to re-expand is probably your best bet.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call.
It's kind of interesting where you get into places where they have extreme expansive clay soils, such as Texas. They actually build a soaker system into the ground around the foundation on brand new construction. Out there, when it dries out, you can get 12 to 15 inches of movement in the soil. So they literally put this soaker system, this water system, around the foundation to make sure that the soil stays the same moisture content. And unfortunately, with the weather we had this year, we're going to see a little bit more of it.
Yeah. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're welcoming your questions today about the care and maintenance of your home. For Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, we invite your questions on everything from windows and siding to roofing and gutters to attics and basements. Pretty much anything that might go into a single-family home. If you're thinking about making some changes, maybe something needs to be repaired, you're welcome to call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We'll go next to Paul in Champaign County. Good morning, Paul.
Hi. Oh, actually, I came up with another one, but the bait station business, can you get those yourself and, like, sort of test your house? And you said they travel pretty far, so I guess you might be finding one from a woodpile in a neighbor's yard or something. But it would at least alert you to the presence, and then maybe you could do the extensive crawl around in the foundation, crawl spaces and stuff, and look. But does that make any sense, or?
Yeah, at the moment, I am not aware of a home bait station system. My guess is the chemicals needed to do this are pretty either regulated or pretty well hidden by the termite control companies so that they're not readily available. So I have done some search for it. I really have not found any good home chemical that works as well as, say, the Terminex systems, the Centricon systems, things like that.
The other thing was that just came up in my head was considering a service improvement in my electrical, and I was wondering if you knew anything new, and what do you think about the whole house surge protection, and as opposed to, you know, figuring out which circuits you want to dedicate electronics to or that kind of thing, and if there's anything new about I've heard that, you know, the trippers, whatever they're called, they do wear out somewhat, so you do need to replace them. And maybe has anything gotten better in that regard? Or
well, of course,
so
our technology,
yeah.
Our technology is always getting better. The whole house surge protector is not a bad idea. We do have some irregularities in the power in our area, so if you've got a lot of sensitive material. Most electronics have it built in to where there's some type of voltage regulation so that there is room for fluctuation, say from 110 volts to 130, 135 volts. The surge protector is basically a big capacitor, so if we have a brownout sometime where the power drops down to, say, below 80 volts, that it has just a little bit more power in it. If there's a big spike, it absorbs that spike. So it's basically a regulator. And yes, it is an electronic item, so I will say that they can fail. Most of the whole house and surge protectors, unless you get the real expensive ones, I wouldn't necessarily put on the whole house. I'd put them on a couple of dedicated circuits, outlet circuits where you're going to have your electronic equipment plugged in, just to make sure that there's not more current drawn on it than what the surge protector can handle.
Let's go next to Ed in Mahomet. Hi, Ed.
Hi. I have a chimney on my house. It's for a fireplace. It's on the outside wall, and it's brick. Before I purchased it, the previous owners, I guess, had painted it. First of all, I'm not sure if that's appropriate, painting the brick like that. And the second thing is that there are places on the outside surface now that are spalling a little bit. The face, some of the bricks are, the faces are chipping away.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, painting it is not a good thing for the brick. What happens is a brick is made out of clay and it's fired or kiln dried.
Right.
When they kiln dry it, the outside dries faster than the inside because it takes longer to get the heat towards the inside. So the edges of the brick, the outside perimeter of the brick, is actually the hardest portion of the brick. If we get a little bit of moisture into the brick, the softer material inside can actually act as a kind of a soaker or a sponge and hold that moisture. And, of course, here in Illinois where we get a freeze-thaw cycle, we get a little bit of moisture in that brick and we suddenly get below 32 degrees. It wants to freeze. The ice wants to expand. And it breaks that hard surface of the brick off and creates that spalling. When you go and you paint the face of the brick, you now take that normally relatively porous surface and seal it, which if no moisture gets into it, that's great. But if capillary traction is able to wick any water in through a crack, or if we have a chimney cap that is made out of mortar that water can soak down through it, we get any water into the brick, now it can't come out the front of the brick because the front of the brick has a sealer on it.
Right.
So it sits right below the surface.
So
the painting of the brick does make the brick from a low-maintenance item into a high-maintenance item. We have to make sure that any cracks in any of the mortar are sealed quickly. We have to make sure that their mortar cap on top of the chimney is not porous. It either has a tar coating or a roofing coating or a metal coating, something to keep the water from being able to soak in from the top.
Flashed at the top. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily a flashing because the chimney has a mortar cap on top.
It does have a metal flashing at the top, though.
Okay, so it's got a metal cap over the top of the mortar cap?
Right.
Okay. well, hopefully we're not getting water in past that. So, yeah, I would inspect the chimney very close for any cracks in the mortar. Now, once you've broken off the face of the brick, there is no repair for the brick. You can put some mortar over it. It will hold for a short period of time, but short of chiseling the brick out and putting a new one in, there's not much that can be done for it.
Right.
Luckily, the brick is most likely more of a decorative face on it than it is a structural face. Unless the house is previous to probably 1934 or 1940. So it's 1960?
Yeah.
Okay, most likely the chimney is actually a concrete block chimney with a brick facade over the front of it to make it look more traditional.
Right.
People assume that the concrete block is not aesthetically pleasing, so they make it with a brick ledge around the outside, and they build the brick up on the outside. So from a structural standpoint, the chimney's probably still in pretty good shape. But from a cosmetic standpoint, yeah, we're going to have to do something with putting in some new brick where the spalled ones are.
So going forward, like you said, maintain any cracks. How would you deal with cracks? With caulking or chiseling out and remortising?
Remortaring, what they call tuck pointing.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and
where the brick is spalled off, that brick needs to be removed and replaced.
That would be correct.
And what about the paint? I have to keep on painting now, don't I?
No. We want that paint to wear as much as possible. We need the brick to be able to breathe.
Okay.
You might even try and strip it with either a high-pressure wash system or they make some very specific brick cleaning acids. I believe a muriatic acid on the brick to help clean things like that off of it.
Right. Okay. Sounds like I have a job.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where if you don't do something about it, it will get in worse shape cosmetically, but structurally it should still be sound.
Right. All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. How often should you inspect and or clean your chimney, just in general?
Well, nowadays we don't use chimneys as much as what they were originally designed for. Let's face it, a chimney originally was designed for heating purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was relegated to cooling the kitchen areas, wood stoves and such. Mm-hmm. Now we've moved to more electric and gas and things like that. We don't use the chimneys much. If you have a fireplace, depends on how much wood you burn. If you're the person that burns Christmas, Thanksgiving, special occasions, you can probably get by for 15 years or better without having to worry about it. If you're the type of person that wants to have a fire every two or three nights during this winter just for ambiance, something like that, the general rule of thumb, about every two cords of wood.
Okay.
Now, a cord of wood is 2 feet deep by 4 feet high by 10 feet long, which is a lot of wood.
Yeah.
So unless you're burning a lot, you're probably not getting a lot of creosote in it. It can reduce it when you have a metal flue rather than a brick flue. The metal flues will get a little bit, because the metal transfers heat, they actually stay cooler, and so the flue gases going up through the chimney can condense a little bit more out of the flue gases. So a metal flue, you may want to change or clean out about every one cord of wood or so.
And please remember to open the flue before you start the fire.
Don't ask me how I know. Yes. Yes, if you start the fire and the flue's shut, the smoke detector allows you to remember that that was not a good thing to do.
Well, we're still talking about chimneys. We have a call from Norman in Lafayette, Indiana, with a question about them. Norman.
This, too, is about chimneys, inspired by you. I have the flashing at the bottom of the chimney where it meets the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't, as far as I know, leaked for 60 years. Just one curiosity to add. The house, a couple houses down, has a aluminum siding all over the house, which includes the outside of the chimney. Have you ever seen aluminum siding on a chimney?
Yes, there's a lot of times where they will side the chimney. Again, most of the time, the chimney on anything from about 1940 on is probably a concrete block chimney and has the brick as a decorative cover. Since it is a decorative cover, it is a siding, and there's no reason why we can't put another siding over the top of it.
No reason, but it looked peculiar.
That's exactly it. It does not meet with the architectural style that we're used to. We're we're basically, anytime we see a house, we expect to see the chimney going up in brick. So that's what they make, is the brick over the top of it. But the newer homes, particularly the vinyl siding homes, very rarely do we have a brick chimney because the structure is not designed to support the weight of the brick. So they do run vinyl siding or aluminum siding up and around the chimney. And there is no problem with that. We just have to make sure that whatever the siding is, that we're relatively watertight, weathertight behind the siding, because the siding is not usually sealed up tightly.
Well, this was just for your mm-hmm. enjoyment. I'm still looking for a house with aluminum siding on two chimneys.
Okay. Well, most of the time you won't find the aluminum siding anymore, because the aluminum siding was a deal from about 1950 to about 1985, and then along came vinyl siding, so now everybody's doing vinyl siding.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I'll just throw in a quick little blurb about your chimney flashings. Since a brick chimney does have a masonry base going to the bottom, the house moves up and down with wood framing, the chimney flashing you should be a two-piece flashing with a flashing and counter-flashing to allow for movement between the roof and the brick.
We have, I'm afraid we're out of time.
Oh, sorry about that.
That happened really fast. But we've got a couple of folks who have sent in some emails. I was wondering if you could answer those off air.
I would be more than happy to.
Terrific. Okay, excellent. Scott Spies is a home inspector from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Scott, as always, thanks for talking with us.
All right. Well, thank you.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. Remember, you have a second chance to hear this program every weeknight at 8 on WILL AM 580. If you know someone who might enjoy hearing the program but can't listen weekday mornings at 10, let them know about our nightly rebroadcasts at 8 p.m. Today's show was produced by Travis Stansel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry is our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.